All right, everybody. So I've had a lot of people reach out to me, giving me a lot of support for signing the People in Tech podcast. And I want to really first say thank you for supporting me. But this Anchor platform has been amazing and been changing my life, getting me connected with some people in this industry that I never thought I would actually get to not only have conversations with, but learn from. And I know some of you who are tuning in are asking, Caleb, how did you start a podcast? You know, when I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all the other places people listen to? How do I make money from my podcast? Well, keep it simple. The answer to every one of these questions is Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. Best of all, it's 100% free. And we ridiculously easy to use. My very first episode I did for my iPhone 6 Plus. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors too. So you can get paid to do your own podcast. Hop on the Anchor platform so we can collaborate and build this community up. You know, one thing I love most about Anchor is that they're constantly being innovative, you know, allowing podcasts to leverage music, get sponsorship, get paid, and ultimately be the best content creator you can be. So if you've always wanted to start your podcast and make money doing it, go to anchor.fm/start to join me and a diverse community of podcasters already using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. I can't wait to hear your podcast.
Have you ever felt?
Are you listening? Damn.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the People in Tech podcast. I'm your host, Caleb King, and today's episode, we're going to be talking about diversity in tech. And I have the lovely Heather Madison in the studio today. And for our listeners who don't know Heather, she's doing some phenomenal work in the community, working with historically black universities, working with the youth, making sure they understand that the tech world is a field not only where they can succeed and thrive in, but they can dominate and lead the next generation. So we're going to cover a variety of topics today. I'm super excited for this episode. This is one you don't want to miss. Join the conversation, and let's get into it. DJ Side Hustle, welcome back from vacation. We hope you enjoyed the break because the listeners, I, myself, need you. You need to do what you do best, and that is switch it up, switch it up, switch it up. Let's get it. DJ Side Hustle. I'm happy you're back in the studio because I know I missed you and I'm sure our listeners missed you. Heather, I don't know if you've listened to previous episodes in the past, but we normally do announcements and then we go into shout out and then we kick off the interview. So starting off with announcements, actually, I do need to say this first. For all my new listeners, you are now considered what I like to call a day one listener. So thank you for finding a podcast. We hope you enjoy the conversation. We thank you for the love, appreciate the support. And our call to action for all our listeners is to make sure you subscribe, 5-star, and leave a review on the podcast for whatever platform you listen to us on. Those reviews, those give me feedback on what I need to do to make this a better podcast for you guys. Remember, the motto for the podcast is, we are here for you. For the people, by the people, delivered to the people. So one of the things that I've been working on is expanding to more platforms and trying to put out more content. And one of my goals has been creating a Facebook page, an Instagram page, and I'm currently working on making a YouTube page with transcriptions. So stay tuned for that when I make that announcement. But really, for all my listeners, make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram. I'm going to link it in the show notes below. And it's really going to be like Facebook.com, People in Tech, or Instagram, People_in_tech. But yeah, working on expanding to more platforms. Anchor recently made it a lot easier to transcribe podcasts. And I've actually been contacted by some of my listeners asking, hey, Caleb, you know, I'm not from America, but I want to understand urban culture better because I'm coming there in a few months. And I really enjoy your podcast, but is there a way you can transcribe your podcast? Because there's some things that you talk about or mention, whether it's your dialect or the jargon, lingo, whatever, that I would like to write down and be like, oh, that's what that means. So that is one of the reasons why I'm trying to expand to a YouTube channel, why I'm trying to expand to more platforms. And again, it's a work in progress, but those are my goals for the podcast. We have a lot of momentum going. Got a whole bunch of episodes lined up over the next month or two. And I am still enjoying not only making this podcast, but really just having fun creating content in general. And for all listeners, I've had a few people say, man, Caleb, you started a podcast. I should have started a podcast. Look, if you want help, if you need a jump start, if you don't know where to start, you know where to find me. You could always hit me up on Twitter, at KingCaleb3, hashtag People in Tech. If you know me personally, don't hesitate to just come up to me and ask, like, hey, I need help. I want to do a podcast, or me and my wife want to do a podcast, or me and the boys want to do a podcast, or me and the girls want to do a podcast, whatever. I'm here to help because you guys know the motto. We are here for you. Now, those are all the big announcements. Oh, I have one mini announcement, but it's more personal for me. But I do want to highlight it because we're going to be talking about diversity in tech and giving back to the community. So because of the podcast success, I was contacted by Thankful. Now, for those of you who aren't aware what Thankful is, it is a e-learning immersive program where you don't have to quit your day job, but it's a program where you can sign up and learn how to become a developer, whether it's front end, back end, data science, or the few different tracks that they offer. And when Thankful contacted me, they asked me, hey, would you be interested in becoming a mentor? And one, I was like, how'd you find me? And they're like, well, we saw that you had a podcast and it had a decent following. And we know that you've been in the software development industry for about 5 years now. So we think you'd be a good fit to be a mentor. And that was so flattering because I can tell you right now, I've been wanting to be a teacher. I think that's one of my end goals in my life and my career, to ultimately become a teacher and show people the potential and opportunities you have within the tech space. But I cannot tell you, in terms of confidence, that was such a booster. One, I feel as a developer, we always suffer what I like to call imposter syndrome, which is pretty much the lack of confidence that, like, am I good at this? Is this for me? And maybe that comes from comparing myself to others, or maybe just feeling like I'm not as experienced as my colleagues or peers. But one of the best ways to learn is by teaching. So the fact that Mentor contacted me and they were more than willing to say, hey, we graduate mentors, so you're not going to be teaching advanced concepts you don't feel like you have a grasp on. So I'm going to be doing a mentor program where I'm going to be teaching front-end development, HTML, CSS, JavaScript, no frameworks, no backend, nothing extremely complex, but hey, we all started somewhere. And what I really want to highlight is, for all my listeners, I know some of you guys are already in the tech space doing some really good things, and I highly suggest giving back to the community. And I look at some of my coworkers, like my really good friend Wendy. She's constantly giving back to community. You know, I got my boy Jordan, who's giving back to the community. My friend Kamal, who's been on a podcast, he's giving back to the community. So I felt like it was finally my time to step up and say, hey, I still have a lot more growing to do, of course, but I think it's finally time for me to help jumpstart, or at least help somebody get started in the tech space, because I've had this is a great journey so far, and I hope the journey gets better as time goes on. So that's another announcement for me personally. But don't hesitate. Don't worry. My number one focus is, of course, the podcast, because this is what I enjoy doing the most. This is what I have fun doing. To me, it's not a lot of work. I sometimes wish you guys can see when I do record an episode and edit it. I might have to say things several times before I really like the way it sounds. But overall, really enjoy doing this podcast. Still want to be a better content creator for you guys. And just want to keep pushing and keep moving the culture forward. So those are all big announcements. I kind of did the shout outs with the announcements. Really the only shout outs I got is shout out to my boy Terry. Shout out to my boy Lance. Shout out to the BBIP group. We had a phenomenal meeting. BBIP is a meetup group, a user group in Phoenix. And I actually really enjoyed that meeting because we all just kind of had like a hoorah, making sure we're just doing things. We can stick together, do big things. Shout out to that whole group. I think we're going to be doing some phenomenal stuff in the future. And yeah, guys, that's about it for shout outs. Those are announcements. I know you didn't come here to hear me talk. I know you want to hear more about diversity in tech. So let's get into the interview.
Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready?
What's up, Heather? Thank you for being in the studio today. I'm super excited for this episode. Do you have anything to say to the listeners before we kick off today's interview?
I just wanted to say thanks for having me and to say hello to all the listeners out there.
Awesome. All right, well, we won't keep the listeners waiting. Let's just go into the interview. Heather, how did you get into tech?
The way I got into tech was a little bit strange. I, throughout my life, have always enjoyed mentoring college students, mentoring high school students, tutoring. And so I've always had this connection with education and with students. I'm also studying to be a life coach. And so mentoring and coaching were also a part of my life. And I did those things on the side. So even while I was a manager, a product manager, and I was in marketing, this got noticed by some of the folks on the diversity team where I work. And so there were some big initiatives coming up. The diversity initiatives were kicking off around the country. And I got pulled in to help to build a community of students of color who might be interested in working at my company.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So can you just kind of clarify how long have you been in the tech industry for our listeners?
Sure. I've been in the tech industry since about year 2000. So does that make it almost about 18 years?
Okay. So you've been around the block for a while.
Yes.
And I'm assuming you were part of that tech boom. What was that like?
Yes. Yeah, so the tech boom was that was from 1999 to about 2001, right before everyone got laid off. I was working. I had come out of a leadership program at General Electric, and I went to Austin, Texas, and I worked for several startups, and I had an absolute blast. Those times were crazy. For example, we had cab cards to take us downtown that were free, given to us by the company.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, within 2 months of being there, I had won a car, the opportunity to drive a vintage car, 1965 Cadillac.
Okay.
And that was my gift. Okay. For being on the team.
Wow. Yeah. That is a great gift.
That's right. So it was also really rich and fast-paced. I built most of my development skills. I actually used to be a developer. That's okay. How I started out.
All right.
Yeah. So I built a lot of my development skills in this rich environment where there were just always people encouraging me to do something interesting. It was one of those environments where you could just try something new. And then people would jump in to like help you and guide you.
Right.
And before you knew it, that's how you develop this new skill.
Okay.
Yeah.
So transitioning really from being a developer into what you consider a project manager, product owner.
Yes.
Today. So, what do you like about your current role?
What I love about my current role. So right now, my current role is I'm the university partnerships program manager.
Okay.
So I manage partnerships with universities and with schools also with the scholars from those schools and the professors and the deans.
Okay.
So making sure that they have access to curriculum resources within the company, as well as big collaborations, speakerships on campus, those types of things. So I get to manage a lot of that communication and those partnerships.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, like, as you know, this episode is diversity in tech, right?
Yes.
And my understanding is that communication that you're just speaking about is improving not only diversity, but helping a lot of young college kids really get into the tech industry. So my question to you is, you know, what does diversity mean to you?
Diversity means to me, actually, the best quote I've heard on diversity that I took was from Shonda Rhimes. She wrote a book recently, and in her book, she described it as finding your own tribe.
Okay.
Finding your tribe and feeling as if you are wholly accepted and you can be fully yourself and you're fully embraced by a group of people. That's what diversity means. And that diversity, when we talk about it in those terms, it's really inclusion, to feel included. It's like feeling that one is being invited to the party. Inclusion is dancing. Everybody wants to see you dance.
Right.
You know? And so that's what diversity means to me.
Okay. And kind of just elaborate for me, you know, has diversity in your eyes changed since the tech boom to, you know, 2018?
Yes. Well, actually, let me answer that in a couple different ways. First, we dug up some old presentations at our company from 10 years ago.
Okay.
On what needed to happen to increase diversity. Then, 1 or 2 years ago, we did more studies, more focus groups to find out what do we need to do now. Those presentations looked almost exactly the same.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
And what that said is that there were great intentions. There have been great intentions for many years, decades even, on increasing diversity, but we haven't moved the needle. And so now the difference is there's a lot of attention. There's more attention and focus to the tunes of hundreds of millions of dollars. Google invested $150 million just in 2015, 2016 alone, in 1 year,
right,
on diversity initiatives. Apple funded the Thurgood Marshall Fund, about $50 million. That's all scholarships and programs.
Right.
Now we're seeing the focus and the attention. That's the big thing that's different. What remains to be seen is how we will move the needle, whether we'll actually move the needle. 10 years from now, will we have the same presentation?
Okay. And, you know, for some of our listeners, I know maybe when I was younger in my career, when I heard diversity, I literally just thought, you know, I'm from this place, you're from that place, you're from a different country than I am, and throw us all in one team and boom, you have diversity. Can you kind of just dispel some of those diversity myths?
Sure.
That some of our listeners might have?
Sure. So one of the myths is what you said, actually. We should get everyone onto a team and working together, people from different thoughts, diversity of thought, which is you can do that through race, through gender, through religion, okay, bringing that all to the table, and everyone will have a really strong and cohesive team. So that is the vision. That is everyone's vision.
Okay.
And not only is that the vision, we know that that vision works. We've done tests, we've looked at teams. What tends to happen, there's a backlash. What you're seeing, for example, as an example, the Google manifesto that came out, James Damore, I believe his name was. That was an example of Google implementing their diversity programs, implementing this vision of everyone playing nicely in the sandbox and building these great products, and a backlash happening. What we haven't, there's a myth, there's a common myth that's getting in the way. The first myth is meritocracy.
Okay.
Everyone in America, the backbone of this country was built on the idea that this country is a meritocracy. It never was. This country was built on the backs of slaves, and in addition, it was built on land stolen from Native Americans. And that was actually how we started, if we want to think of it that way.
Okay.
How does this impact the idea of meritocracy today? There are groups within America that have unequal standing, unequal access to resources. But when we talk about the corporate world, we bring that into the corporate world, and there's this belief that there is a meritocracy. What that group is actually saying is, the people who are not being included, that is women and people of color, are inherently unequal. The reason why they're not in leadership roles that are traditionally taken up by men, the reason why is because they are inherently or biologically inferior.
Okay.
that's the message that this meritocracy idea embraces.
Okay.
So when we hear this, but so the meritocracy idea is built on false assumptions and false beliefs. And so the message that you're hearing from this Google manifesto and the backlash that we're hearing at many companies that's quiet, mm-hmm. companies aren't really broadcasting this, is, hey, if you let in people of color, if you let in women, that means we're lowering the bar. That's the message that the entire tech industry is fighting right now.
Okay.
It's this idea of, well, this is a meritocracy. If they were good enough, they would have been here already.
Right.
Okay. So the meritocracy idea has two pieces to it, though. The first, the meritocracy means that a group has access to resources based on talent, skills, and ability. That goes two ways. The first way is, the assumption is that the people who are of color did not have the skills and talent, and the women who were there, the people in the LGBTQ community, those with diverse abilities, the idea is that they didn't have, that's what meritocracy, that's the implication. We're believing that this group of people didn't have the capabilities and skills to take leadership roles in many areas throughout the U.S. The second assumption, which is equally false, is that the people who are in charge, they do have all of the capabilities, and that's how they got those leadership roles.
Okay.
Purely based on their ability. So the first thing we have to do is break up the idea of meritocracy, because the people who are on top didn't get there purely based on their abilities. And the people who are not in those leadership roles, it's not because of their talent and abilities.
Okay. So you're really highlighting something there where it's not necessarily, like you said, it's not just race. You even mentioned the LGBT community, right?
Yes.
So like diversity can really go all across the board, like you said,
yes.
Race, religion, and you know, everything in between, right?
Yes.
So, me being a developer myself, I see some companies are really making a great effort to improve their diversity.
Yes.
But can you just speak to what you've seen, why some companies fail?
Yes.
With implementing diversity in their corporation?
Yes. So, the key message and the key activities that are happening right now is, let's go recruit a bunch of folks who are diverse. There's a push for folks with diverse abilities, incorporating and integrating people who are blind, who have even blind and people who have other physical disabilities,
right.
Those on the autism spectrum, those in the LGBTQ community. Let's hire these folks, bring them to the corporation. What's not happening is what's next. The piece that's missing is the conversation. Now we need to teach others how to have emotionally safe conversations about race. That's what's not happening. That's the missing link.
Okay.
We brought them to the table, but in some cases, not all cases, so I want to give credit to those groups and those individuals who get it, because some people are woke. Not everybody, some people are woke,
right.
As you want to say.
Right.
But what happens is you have small factions that are loud. And as you saw, for example, with Google and what you're seeing in some companies, and that can actually break up some of the communication and create an emotionally unsafe environment to discuss race. That's the next piece. So most what you're seeing now is the hiring. That's what most of these millions are spent on, scholarships and hiring to create access to students who don't have access to education, create that access, get them mentored, and then get them in the workplace. But that's the missing link, the conversations.
Okay. And then that kind of leads into my last question before we go into halftime. So I've worked at companies in the past where company is so large where they have these inner groups, young professionals, people 29 mm-hmm. and under, or, you know, the mm-hmm. Latin group, the historically black group, or whatever the case is.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that is a solution towards having that conversation, or do you think there's some improvements that need to be done alongside that?
I think that's a huge starting point, creating communities where people feel emotionally safe and accepted. So we talked about diversity and inclusion being finding your own tribe. This is a way to help find your own tribe. What that can't do necessarily is get you promoted. And what we need to see, it's not just having a community there. It's also seeing people, diverse people in leadership roles that are traditionally held by whites or Asians.
Right.
That's the key. So it's a starting point.
Okay. Awesome. Well, before we go into halftime, I have one question. Have you seen Black Panther yet?
Of course I saw Black Panther. Okay. And we want to see it again today. We have it on our calendar.
Awesome. Yeah, I saw it the second time yesterday with my girlfriend, and even she loved it. And we were both kind of sitting there, and I was happy to see her enjoy it as much as I enjoyed it. I think it does so much for the community, for the culture, and overall, it's just a great movie.
Yes.
You know, so I'm hoping this kind of starts a boom, right? Where, you know, now young kids can say, hey, I can be like a king. I can be T'Challa. I can be whatever it is I want to be. And I think Hollywood is now seeing people want to see movies with people who look or represent them to some degree.
Yes.
So I know some people, it's just a movie, but since we're talking about diversity today, I really think that is a movie that is helping push diversity forward and saying this is important.
Yes.
And we need to continue to do these things.
Yes. I wholeheartedly agree. There were a couple things that stood out for me with Black Panther, and they've already been mentioned in the media. And I agree with them, and it's, we need a story that was triumphant, and it was about heroes, and it was not about the slave story.
Yeah.
We needed to break from this idea of the world seeing us as slaves. We know that our ancestors were that. We know where we came from. The question is, where are we going, and how far can we go? That's where Black Panther pushed the boundaries.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to go into halftime. We're going to let our sponsors do what they do, and we'll be right back.
Okay. Yeah, they wishin' and wishin' and wishin' and wishin'. They wishin' on me. Yeah. I've been movin' calm. Don't start no trouble with me. Trying to keep it peaceful is a struggle for me. Don't pull up at 6 a.m. to cuddle with me. You know how I like it when you loving on me. I don't want to die for them to miss me. Yes, I see the things that they wish in on me. Hope I got some brothers that outlive me. They gone tell the story, shit was different with me. God's plan. God's plan. Bad things. It's a lot of bad things. That they wish in and wish in and wish in and wish in. They wish in on me. Bars. Caleb, I love that new Drake song. OMG. It is fire. Now the tech fact of the week. Enjoy, you nerds.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you, of course, like always, Sharon. And at first I heard you and I was like, what is she rapping right now? And I was like, oh, she's doing Drake's God's Plan, like bad things, bad things. It's a lot of bad things that they wishing and wishing and wishing on me. That is one of my favorite songs right now. And I have to admit, being an urban hip-hop podcast, that Drake is my favorite artist right now. And I swear, every time he drops a new album, new song, whatever it is, I'm always like, dude, this guy is literally talking about things that apply to my life. And whether it's dealing with haters or what the motto is or One Dance, which is like me and my girlfriend's favorite song that we're probably like put on repeat in the future one day. For like our big wedding and all that good stuff, like he always just puts out fire songs. But not here to talk about music. Here to talk about the random tech fact of the week. This one goes out to all my day one listeners who had smartphones before smartphones. I'm talking about your Blackberries. I'm just talking about actually any phone that had a QWERTY keyboard. Did you know the QWERTY keyboard was designed to slow you down? And there's two theories to this. The first one starts to make sense when you look at manual typewriters. If someone typed too fast, the keys would jam. QWERTY placed common alphabets at a distance from each other and slowed typists down. Another theory is that the telegraph operators designed QWERTY layout because it was easier and faster to decipher Morse code. Either way, there is no reason to keep using a layout, but it stuck around because there was a resistance to change. So you can actually change your keyboard to the faster DOVRAK, D-V-O-R-A-K, layout in the language settings, or just buy a new DOVRAK keyboard.
But to recap to the newer millennials, QWERTY is pretty much, if you look at your keyboard, if you look at when you text somebody, whether you're a smartphone or an Android device, ASDF, those letters are next to each other. But imagine if it was ABCD all next to each other. Back in the day, that was considered faster, but because of manual typewriters, we had to switch it up, and we've never gone back. So I thought that was a very interesting tech fact of the week. QWERTY is here to stay. It's probably not going anywhere. I think I learned on a QWERTY keyboard, and I feel like I type faster on it now. I don't see the keyboard layout changing anytime soon universally, but like I said, you do have the ability to go into your settings and change your layout. That's the tech fact of the week. Make sure to check out my boy Drake, new song, God's Plan, and let's get back into an interview. Yes, sir! We are back. I have the lovely Heather in the Don't Quit Your Day Job Studios. And again, Heather, thank you for being here. And let's just get back into the interview. You know, we talked a lot about diversity in the first half. But can you just explain to the listeners what really compelled you to take on more diversity roles within the tech industry?
Sure. I have always throughout my life had really big questions about diversity and about my own identity. I was born and raised in Houston, Texas. One of the very first times that diversity was placed into my sphere was I was actually watching Tom and Jerry.
Okay.
I was watching a cartoon, and if you remember in the cartoons, there was just one black character. It was Mamie. She was the maid on Tom and Jerry.
I never paid attention a lot. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
It was one, but I was paying attention at even that age, right? As a child. So what happened is, Mamie, the woman who was white, who was the homeowner, she had on nice heels, and she spoke in perfect diction, and she went to go shopping. Mamie split her verbs. She was clearly poorly educated, and she wore these shuffling, the shoes were what stood out to me, these shuffling slippers.
Okay.
And what hit me was, I turned around and I looked at my own mother and I thought, and there was the dissonance. That's where things didn't match. My mother wears heels. My mother goes shopping. My mother doesn't speak that way. But this is the only character I'm seeing on television that does. And there the split happened. I realized that there was a person, there were people behind the television. That's the only way I could describe it. Who didn't see me the way I saw myself. And I thought, what would have happened to me if my mother was a maid and she didn't have an education, which she did? How would I have felt about myself and how would I have seen my role in the world?
Right.
And so from age 7, my thoughts and ideas grew. I'm living in Houston, Texas, hearing some of the mistrust within the black community of white people, hearing that, and then going off and deciding not to go to a school that was predominantly African-American. I decided purposely not to go to a school that was in the South because I needed to go learn. I wanted to be among people who were different from me. And I was raised in a safe, beautifully safe African-American community. I wanted to go see what the world was like and make my own decisions about race and make my own decisions about who I was and not have them made before me completely. And so this idea of race has always been a threat in my life, especially when I hit massive culture shock. I went to Bentley College.
Okay.
It was predominantly white, but it was diverse to a lot of international students.
Okay.
And I learned more about race in those 4 years than I had the rest of my life. And so race has always been a thread for me. It's always been important to me. And then coming in, and so when this role became available, it was simply an opening. It was simply an opportunity. It finally came by for me to actually put some of those ideas and wants and dreams into action.
Right. Oh, that's actually, it makes me feel a lot better. Because one thing I want the listeners to know is I feel like I go to some networking events and people always come up to me and they're like, Caleb, are you half black, half white? And I'm like, no.
Uh-huh.
But like they're shocked because they look at me and they're like, you're lighter skinned than most people, and they're like, I just didn't know what assumption to make the Tom and Jerry observation is very, very interesting. Because some of my favorite TV shows, I always kind of notice that I love superheroes and I love comics. And to kind of see some of my favorite TV shows, I was like, how come the leader never that diverse guy? Or, like, I think I love Power Rangers because, like, the Red Ranger wasn't necessarily, like, a typical white guy. But then later on, they make the White Ranger the leader, and that's a different story. But I remember for the longest time, I was like, where? I don't have examples of people who look like me who are doing things that I really want to do one day or envision myself doing one day.
Yes.
So that's very interesting that you brought that up. I definitely think we all have some culture shock. For you, it was college. For me, it was college and a little bit of high school. But, you know, that kind of leads into my next question for you. Going back to tech and diversity, you know, if you were to put it on a scale 1 to 10, how do you feel the tech industry is doing implementing diversity and improving upon it?
I would say a 6. And I would say a 6 because, first, there are several major companies within the tech industry have taken accountability. That's the first step to the leadership level. Accountability is critical. That's number one at the leadership level. Creating a diverse environment is not a black problem. It's everybody's problem.
Okay,
so that's one. Number two, bringing everyone to the table. That's what the tech industry has done a good job of doing. The money that has been spent on getting people of diverse cultures and backgrounds to the table with people who are white or majority, as they call it. Okay, great. The next step, which will get us to 7 or 8, is facilitating those discussions in emotionally safe ways about race. And it's also acknowledging getting white people to acknowledge amongst their peers that they experience they're ostracized when they go to discuss race amongst themselves. Getting some awareness of that so that we can all start to think about race in a different way.
Right.
And so that's the next piece that can happen to bring us to 7 or 8 at least.
Okay. I'm really happy you highlighted that because I feel like society as a whole, we look at it like it's a black problem, or it's a white problem, or it's a Mexican, Asian, whatever the case is. But really, we're all people, and like we're trying to find that one tribe, and we all are trying to live on this earth, right? And
yes.
Be happy while we're living here.
Yes.
So yeah, I think that's a really good observation that you pointed out. Like, it's not a one area problem. It is all of our problem.
Yes.
And it's something we need to continue to work on and improve upon.
Yes.
Now, you talked about it in the first half about, you know, you are helping college programs and transitioning them into the workforce. You know, can you speak what type of programs or universities, if you can speak on it,
sure.
That you're working with?
Sure. So I manage programs with 6 historically black colleges and universities, and these schools happen to have engineering programs. And so that's, for example, your Howard University, Morgan State University, North Carolina A&T, Tuskegee, Prairie View A&M, Florida A&M. And then also, too, Georgia Tech has a thriving group and community of people of color and people who are diverse. And we also tap into that community as well. And so what we do is create mentorship and scholarships. We have mentorships, scholarships, student programs. There's tutoring programs that we either fund or we support directly ourselves. And that's to give those students the support to continue with their STEM degree. And so that's part of my job.
And I'm really happy you mentioned STEM.
Mm-hmm.
I do my best to be involved in the STEM program because, again, like it just pushing the culture, moving it forward, right?
Yes.
We need diversity in the tech world because what we like to call it on the podcast, we call it idea sex. But the idea that, you know, different backgrounds can help build better ideas. And having that crossing of, you know, your idea from, and you're from point A, and I'm from point B, maybe we can make something really, really great.
Absolutely.
So I'm really happy that you're involved in those programs. Kind of leads into my next question. We've talked a lot about diversity today, but just give me some of the top benefits of really focusing on improving diversity within the workplace.
Sure. I'll tell you, I was at a Human Rights Campaign dinner just last night with my husband, and Greg Mayer Stanton was there on stage, and he actually nailed it. He said that what's good for people is good for business. Diversity is good for business. It's good for people, and it's good for business. And how? When you have multiple ideas, you're stronger as a team. You're stronger as a team. It's that idea that you just mentioned, that we get better ideas and we're actually using the full capability of what we have, of the people we have, all their talents and abilities. Right now, we're not.
Right.
We're not. And there's another problem that is more political that's happening right now. Right now, if most of the companies who are looking for STEM PhDs, highly technical, these are folks who may go on to work for the government or the National Science Foundation or what have you. If you look for them, a high percentage of those individuals are not American, as an example. We have we are missing out on lots of STEM talent that is American even. This is one of the reasons, and we know that we will not have enough STEM talent to fill our own pipelines within just a few short years. We're looking for them. So we are short on talent, and we have all of these individuals who don't have college degrees, as an example, or who are dropping out of college. They're dropping out of the STEM pathway because it's too hard, or the, especially with people of color, they feel isolated.
Right.
They don't feel that support. They don't see the mentors necessarily who look like them, the people who look like them who are succeeding in these fields. So that's what we're trying to do, is find the mentors to help help students to see themselves in these roles and envision themselves as leaders and as change makers in the STEM fields.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm happy you highlighted, you know, seeing somebody you can kind of look up to, looking for some type of mentor, right? I think a lot of us, if you're smart, you do seek a mentor, but it makes it a lot easier if you can relate to your mentor, right?
Yes.
I've definitely been in situations where I'm the only person of color in the room, and I do my best to put a smile on and kind of crack jokes about it. But there is some level of discomfort, whether it's with myself or with other people talking about certain topics, or they don't feel they can bring it up without offending me. But yeah, again, going back to the mentor role, I think we need more mentors out there trying to help build up the next generation to really say, hey, like, you can do this.
Yes.
Because I've done it. And the next person after you can do it. So just kind of setting that precedent, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's take it a step back. Now, let's say I have a startup company.
Yes.
You know, let's say I have 100 people.
Yes.
Right? We're kind of diverse, but we want to improve our diversity.
Sure.
And we bring you on. We're like, hey, Heather, we need your help.
Sure.
We don't even know where to start. You know, what would be the process? You know, what would be your first 100 days if you were, you know, kind of like the president, right? You're coming in and you're like, hey, in the first 100 days, yes, I'm going to do this.
That's a great question. The first thing I would do, which some companies start out this way and some don't, is actually facilitate those conversations about race right up front. Why are we doing this? What do we think the benefits will be? And get out onto the table in an emotionally safe way. And there's ways to do that. You can use a consultant, even have someone who is who's not connected to your mission to come in and help facilitate those. But the key is to get out on the table. Do you really believe that this will benefit us? What are your true thoughts? Because what happens is your leader may go and create some program to include more people of color or more diversity within the environment. And then because some of these unspoken ideas are still there simmering under the surface about meritocracy and who deserves what, then the team falls apart anyway, because you can't change minds and hearts through rules and regulations. You can't change minds and hearts. Changing minds and hearts requires conversation. So I'd have the conversation first. Get people onto the same page, at least the same understanding.
Okay.
Create understanding amongst the people who are there, and then go and find diverse hires. The other piece that needs to happen is we need to talk about the idea of meritocracy and that it doesn't exist. And so that needs to be part of the conversation. and why it doesn't exist. So if you can break that down, you can create some more receptiveness so that when you do have a diverse group, people are open to the idea. Because that's what's happening. That's where the tech industry is falling down.
So really, kind of recapping there, you have to be transparent with your employees. I've definitely been in situations where we're saying, hey, we're going this route, and they never explain why, and then you kind of get disgruntled, right? Because you're like, well, why are we doing this? Am I in trouble? Or is there something they're trying to do, but I just don't understand? So being transparent, communication, of course. But like you said, gaining that level of understanding and making sure everybody is at least on the same page of why we're going this way.
Yes.
And here are the benefits of this is the information we found. So going back to that's educating.
Right? Yes. Yes.
Okay. Now, I know some of our listeners have been listening to this episode and are like, oh my gosh, Heather is awesome. How do I get a job like Heather? Because like you said, you started off as a developer. When I worked with you, you were a product owner. Yes. Sound like you've done some things in between. Mm-hmm. You know, for our listeners out there, any advice to get in a role like you or trying to make a difference like you are trying to make?
Sure. You know, people get into these roles in a couple of different ways. But normally these roles are in human resources. They're normally led by human resources. What I would suggest, though, you don't necessarily have to be part of HR to have this type of role or to make a difference. What people do is they may use their domain experience in training, coaching, and facilitation. Some of the folks who got into our group, they were outstanding data analytics or data scientists.
Okay.
And so they got in because there's an enormous amount of data and number crunching that happens within human resources to identify what's happening to trace the path of leadership or of departing the company or of arrival. Of all of the diverse individuals at the company. And now what companies are starting to do, there was a lawsuit that came out on Valentine's Day. And basically IBM said, we don't want you hiring our chief diversity officer, Microsoft. You cannot hire them because diversity is actually a trade secret. Is that important now?
Wow.
They considered it a trade secret, so they're suing. They're suing the person who left. But my point there was what they didn't mention is they're starting to use artificial intelligence in human resources to try and understand the idea of diversity. And so if you have those skills, artificial intelligence, data science, there are all these ways that you can intersect and have these skills that are useful in human resources and in global diversity and inclusion. The other thing, for example, almost all companies have what they call a leadership pipeline. There's leadership programs. So there's Lean In Circles, as an example. Okay. Sheryl Sandberg started that at Facebook. You can join and become a Lean In leader or facilitator, as an example, in any group without being in human resources, as an example. You can take on the idea of there's programs to welcome people of color. Join one of those. Welcome women or those who are in LGBTQ community. Join a program at your job to be a part of the welcome committee. Be a mentor. Sign up. Do those things, and it'll increase your visibility within the diversity space. And that is a pathway in.
Okay.
Yeah, so help out where you are. That's the message.
Okay. So like you said, to recap, it's really not a do this, do that, do that. Now I'm in diversity. There's so many different conduits to go that route, right?
Yes.
So really what you're suggesting, where you are now, you have an influence.
Yes.
So take advantage of that spot. Become more visible if you can. Get more involved.
Yes.
And then really just make it a little bit more of a focus, right?
Yes. Make it more of a focus. That's exactly correct. The other piece I would add is what you're also doing by getting involved is you're building relationships, and getting jobs is all about relationships.
Right.
You're building relationships with the folks who are in those roles.
Awesome. This is probably one of my favorite episodes we've done on the People in Tech podcast. And is there anything that you want the listeners, like how can they find you? Are you on Twitter? Is there any programs you want to shout out?
Yes. I am on Twitter. I'm at Book Foodie. Sometimes I tweet about where we are on college campuses. So feel free to like or follow. Definitely when you, though, if you want to move the needle forward on diversity, wherever you are and whatever city you're in, one thing you can do is have those courageous conversations with at your own dinner table. Start the conversations about race and don't go it alone. Find someone else who believes, who wants to have conversations as well, and it's curious. Start that way. Anyone can start. You can also have an impact that way. And that gets into changing hearts and minds. It's about having conversation.
Well, I've learned a lot today. Again, it's always a pleasure talking to you. And yeah, anything else you want to say before we wrap it up?
No, thank you. This has been so much fun, and it's been a privilege. And thank you to all of your listeners.
Well, thank you for being on, Heather. And thank you for everybody tuning in. I hope you really walk away from this episode having just more understanding of how important diversity is. And really, all our listeners, everybody, including myself, you can make a difference. So stay persistent. Keep doing what you need to do. Hone your craft. And if it's important to you, you can make it happen. So again, thank you for being on a podcast today, Heather. And we are out.